Hollison there, but you know, oh, there we go. He's talking to Cantor, and Cantor needs to be quiet because you just got on his train last year. But that's what I mean. Cantor doesn't know how to take up for Westbrook. You sit on the side and you be quiet. As Adams just patted him and said, be quiet.
Hey, all Mighty Ballin fans, Lux and me, at ML Surfboard is Lux, at All Mighty Ballin is me on Twitter. We're coming to you live. Well, no, we're not. We're coming to you in recorded form from, you know, my All Mighty Ballin studio. And, wow, what a game.
I mean, storyline-wise and performance-wise, what a game. In terms of, like, the actual game, it was pretty rough to watch.
Yeah, I feel pretty happy for the Cubs, though.
Yeah, I mean, the fly, old hashtag fly the W.
Hashtag fly the W, indeed. Do you like those? Do you like it that on Twitter you put hashtag and the little team icon comes on?
I have mixed feelings about it. It's always weird, like, how, and like, it's like that falls in the same category as how, like, on Venmo, it'll sometimes auto-correct you into emojis for things. It's real weird. But I guess, like, I don't know, we're returning to, like, a pictographic language.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's something cool about that.
We're like the ancient Egyptians. But anyways, I think I'm actually going to timestamp this episode, which is, generally pretty uncommon for,
us.
Yeah. Maybe I should start doing that, though. But before we start, this episode is brought to you by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Use the promo code ALMIGHTY, you get 20% off, and it's also brought to you by Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/ALMIGHTY to get a free month of Audible and a free audiobook. I talked about, you know, a couple great options on Hoops Historians, including Bill Walton's book, which he reads himself, and Bill Walton, very compelling figure, but the first thing we're going to cover is, let's just run through these games. We're not going to focus on this too long, though, because clearly the marquee game of the night was the Warriors and Thunder game. So, Kings Magic won 102-94.
Finally held the team under 100 points. Something we've been waiting for all season from the Magic.
Yeah, and, you know, this doesn't reflect very well in Boogie, because the Magic sort of score inside because they don't have great shooters, and it's too bad that Jaeger wasn't able to counter the Magic very well.
Yeah, I mean, Fournier had a really good game on the outside, which I think is always going to make a big difference. But yeah, I mean, it's not, if your defense is letting the Magic hang 102 on you, you're doing something that's not super great.
Yeah, sure, definitely. And the Celtics and Cavaliers, 122-128. I chose not to focus on this game for tonight just because Al Horford is out because of concussion protocol, and I believe that there were a couple of other missing players. Marcus Smart returned for the Celtics, but I mean, without Al Horford, they didn't stand much of a chance, I thought. Marcus Smart was back for the Celtics, but without Al Horford, I just really don't think that the Celtics had much of a chance, and I'm surprised that it was as close as it was.
Well, they were missing Horford and Crowder, but Avery Bradley, 26, Isaiah Thomas at 30. They really poured it in. I mean, the biggest story out of that game, though, is LeBron's 2 points short of tying Olajuwon for 10th all-time in scoring.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
LeBron's good at basketball, breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news. Yeah, I mean, surprise, surprise. But it's like, you know, he's already that high on the all-time list. It's kind of surprising, to be honest, given how he's only been in the league, you know, this is like what, his 13th year, 14th year?
I think he started in the NBA.
He was drafted in 03.
He was like 12, so.
Yeah.
Can you pull the games up? I had to move my laptop away because it's loud.
I have the scores right here. I can do the rest of this run. I can do the rest of this rundown.
Sure.
So we got Milwaukee, Indiana. Giannis and Jabari combined for, I think, 55 between the two of them. Giannis also had 9 assists. And they hung 125 on the Pacers, who could only muster up a paltry 107.
Pacers defense continues to be awful.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely abysmal. The Bucks. I mean, I like the Bucks, but their offense is
shit.
Yeah, pretty
bad.
Yeah, pretty putrid. And you know, letting him hang 125 on you is not great. And then,
I mean, one more thing. It's good to see that Jabari is holding up the scoring load. But the Pacers, I mean, they were 28th in defensive rating going into this game. They might be even lower now. So. Yeah, I think that they definitely are showing some warning signs. It's nice that Miles Turner has been effective as he's been so far, though.
Yeah, I mean, Turner's been great. Or, you know, at least, you know, he had a really efficient night again tonight, 6 of 9 for 15.
But offensively, you know.
Yeah, 24. But yeah, but he doesn't, you know, didn't get a lot of rebounds, didn't play great defense. Parker was 4 of 6 from 3, which is maybe the biggest bright spot for the Bucks in terms of going forward. Because if he's going to be hitting threes, then that's really going to change up the dynamics of their offense.
Yeah, definitely.
In pretty major ways. But then lastly, we have the Wolves lose a close one to Denver by 3. Karl Anthony Towns went off, but otherwise... I mean, Wiggins was solid too, but there was nothing outstanding. And, you know...
It was... With 4 minutes left, it was 99 Denver, 96 Timberwolves... So they really let it go in the last 4 minutes. That's been a trend concerning trend for the Warriors. Yeah, well, or
they
not
were,
the
they were down pretty big entering the fourth. They had a real bad third quarter. But they were outscored 33-14. But then they were able to pull it pretty close, and then they just couldn't get over the hump.
Yeah.
Hopefully
they fix that by the end of the season, because that's really... I mean, they've lost now... I think pretty much all of their losses have been them... They've led by the half, mostly. And, you know, certainly they are great in the first quarter, but they're letting it go in the fourth quarter.
Well, tonight was the third, but yeah, like...
Oh, yeah,
it just seems that they're sort of like... prolonged stretches this team goes through of just, like, total brain fart. Lack of effort or, like, inability to, like, you know, sustain a full 48. And, I mean, you know Thibodeau's not going to stand for that, so you sort of assume that that's going to be corrected eventually.
Yeah.
The question is just how long is that going to take as far as their, like, playoff chances or, like, what's their record going to look like, I think is pretty based on that. But those were the undercard games, and the main event tonight was Golden State hosting Oklahoma City. The Russ KD throwdown, the first matchup of a, you know, two brothers turned rivals, and KD got the best of this matchup decidedly.
Yeah, he was pretty much perfect on both sides of the ball throughout the game. Lux just pretty much kept giving me updates like, you know, he shot 12 times and he has 500 points. Like, you know, just
I mean, there were stretches of the game where he was it where
his points per shot were approaching.
Were basically 2.
Yeah.
Or he was like at 1.9, whatever. Like, it was outlandish. There was a stretch where he was just making, like, on a Steph Curry-esque, just like every fast break was just find a trailing Kevin Durant, stop and pop 3.
Yeah.
He
was great from 3. He was aggressive at the rim.
Yeah, he had a couple huge dunks. He played very good defense. He tossed a couple of shots, including one of Russ Westbrook attempt inside that he just, like, spiked into the ground. And shamed Russ's family for generations to come. And he just, like, looked great. I mean, you saw a better performance from Klay Thompson, where he actually hit a couple threes and played really well.
Yeah, that was big.
You saw Pachulia make a lot of really good passes and play a stronger interior defense against a pretty tough Thunder front line in a way that was pretty impressive. You saw really strong perimeter defense out of the Warriors. We got a really great little Steph Curry run in the third. But it's sort of impossible to talk about this game without sort of focusing on, like, Kevin Durant just going absolutely bonkers in the first and second quarter and just sort of shutting this game down before halftime.
Yeah, and I think that this game was defined, and this is something that you said and I definitely agree with. This game was defined because what we saw in the second quarter is what we all expected to see from the Thunder and from the Warriors and Bursts, where they just blew the Thunder out of the water. In the second quarter, the Golden State Warriors scored 30 points and just shut OKC down. OKC only scored 11 points in that quarter.
Right, it might have been more outlandish than that. It was.
No, that was it.
Isn't it 30? It was like 37, maybe? Something crazy like that? I feel like it was even. No, maybe you're right.
Oh, wait. You're right. Yeah, okay, so it was 37 to 11.
Yeah, 37. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. And, I mean, outside of that, like, after the first quarter, it was 32-31. The third quarter was 30-27. 30 for the Warriors, 27 for the Thunder. And then the fourth quarter, it was 24-26. So the only quarter that the Warriors won was the second quarter, but they just were perfect, you know? Like, they looked every bit as good as we thought.
Yeah, well, the three quarters were literally, if you add all 33 of those quarters up, they're a tie. The Warriors lost the first quarter by one, won the third quarter by three, lost the fourth quarter by two.
Yeah.
That's literally a tie, but then they just, like, howitzered the Thunder in the second quarter, and it was something to watch, you know? Like, Steph was drawing fouls on threes because they were, like, slow to get to him because they were over-focused on Durant. Durant was unstoppable. Draymond was moving the ball. Pachulia had a couple behind-the-back moves, a couple behind-the-back dishes, and, like, really did some really great work in the high post. It was just, like, that's what you want to see out of them, right? Like, even the Steph Curry and Durant pick-and-roll that I've, you know, talked about a few times as being, like, this weapon that I can't wait till it's, like, fully unleashed. We're showing signs of, like, what that universe looks like and how it's, like, fully unguardable that team could theoretically become.
Let's touch on really what the concern was for the Warriors going into this game was, are they going to be able to, against the front line of Cantor and Adams, you know, the Thunder are...
And Sabonis, too. Sabonis
is good, yeah. Sabonis had a really good plus-minus. I just got an update from Bleacher Report. KD roasts Cantor. I want to look this up, because that was the intro quote for this episode, is... the commentators talking about it. We saw Cantor yapping.
Right. I mean, one of those little subplots this game is that KD was pretty quiet early in the first quarter, and then Jeremy Grant yammed on him pretty hard, and then he took this game over, and about a third of the way through his, like, utter destruction phase, Cantor started talking some mess,
and then
things only got worse.
KD said after the game, how many minutes he played? I'm sure he'll put something on Twitter tonight.
Dang. Yeah, I mean, he was out for blood on every level tonight. He was a force of destruction, and it was, you know, it was a really all-around impressive, like, performance from
I think it's what we all secretly expected from Russell Westbrook, who, by the way, was 4 for 15 and a negative 9 plus minus.
I mean, it was what, you know, I was worried about with Russ, because a lot of teams don't have the perimeter pressure and perimeter defensive abilities to keep him out of the lane for extended periods of time. But the Warriors did a really good job of, like, making it hard for him to get to the rim.
Yeah, you know, the Warriors actually... Steph Curry has historically guarded Russell Westbrook pretty admirably. Of course, they start out with Klay covering him, but if they can get Steph Curry into a switch on Russell Westbrook, it's generally not a very effective thing for Russell Westbrook. Like, Curry has contested his shots, and Russell Westbrook has the ball in his hands so much, and Steph Curry is really best as a defender defending ball handlers, because he has such quick hands.
Yeah, he's very good with his hands, very good at poking the ball away, and he was really making things difficult for Westbrook. To the point where there were stretches where, like, Oladipo was the best offensive option for the Thunder in spurts. And that's, you know, as soon as that sentence becomes true, the Thunder probably lose.
Well, that's true at least for now. The Thunder are hoping to integrate Oladipo as a featured option. But for now, it really seems like they've stuck to the script in terms of, like, put the ball in Russell's hand and we win or lose on the back of him.
Right, and tonight it was a big-time loss. Yeah, but, like, let's take it back to what we were supposed to be talking about. The Thunder front line, you know, after the loss to the Spurs and just how difficulties that they had with the Pelicans, with Phoenix, the worry with the Warriors was
that... Is that a good name?
Yeah, it could be. Well, I don't think it's a good name for this, yeah. this one.
Yeah.
But it would have been a good one for earlier episodes. Was, like, how is this front line going to play out? And tonight, I thought they just did a super good job of preventing the Thunder from just, like, crashing the boards with all five dudes. They did a really good job of boxing out. Pachulia played really good frontline defense, got a lot of rebounds, and they actually out-rebounded a really strong front line.
Canter banter.
Canter banter's a good one.
Yeah.
But they out-rebounded a really strong front line.
Yeah, 47-41, and 16 offensive rebounds to 13 from the Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's this doesn't disprove the concerns over the Warriors' rim protection and the rebounding ability, but it at least shows that, like, there are means, they have techniques and means and strategies to at least ameliorate or at least somewhat mitigate the damage that disadvantage causes.
Yeah, and it's going to be really important going forward that KD plays defense like he did against the Warriors last playoffs. You know, like, if KD can be a really good off-ball defender, like, coming in, helping...
Right, if he can play that weak side, play weak side on drives, like...
Yeah.
Because he can get across the...
And he's a much better defender in the post that way.
Yeah. And just, like, he gets across... Like, space doesn't exist for Kevin Durant the way it exists for the rest of us. Like,
space is a lot smaller.
Yeah, he traverses distance in ways that make no sense. And he showed that off tonight, just his ability to get across the baseline and either make switches or double teams or block shots. Just, like, with, like, instant, you know, you blink and he's just suddenly there, like, swallowing you whole and spitting the ball out to Steph Curry. Like, it was a really impressive defensive performance, I thought, from him.
Other things to touch on. Zaza definitely had the best game of the season, and that's interesting because we, in the car on the way over, and we also have a featured section we're going to have after we break down this game, where we talk about possible answers for the Warriors at center. But if Zaza can replicate what he did tonight on a consistent basis, because that's really the key thing, is Zaza, like, at his best is a starting center, but, you know, he's a little bit older, he's shown the tendency to deteriorate over time, he's a little bit inconsistent when it comes to key parts of the game, especially for what the Warriors need from him. But if he can do what he did tonight, then, like...
Yeah, well, I mean, the Warriors are really good about resting players and keeping players, you know, not pushing them too far beyond, like, their physical limits and stuff. And so if they can do what they did with Bogut, which is, like, somehow keep him predominantly healthy and available for long stretches and keep playing at a high level, and they can do that with Zaza, then I think they're in an okay place. I mean, he's not ideal for what they do, but he's solid. I mean, and he's hilarious to watch. When Oladipo smacked him in the face and he kind of just dropped the ball and then, like, very slowly fell down, was one of the funniest things I've seen all season. That was amazing. It was almost as funny as when the ball bounced off Kyle Singler's face went out of bounds.
Yes, Kyle Singler continues to be incredibly unlikable. I mentioned to, I think it's like either Andrew or Alex. It's the host of a really great Thunder podcast, Down to Dunk. You should check them out for sure. I mentioned to him that Kyle Singler, you know, might have a bounce back season, but no one's rooting for him because he looks like someone you would want to shove in a locker and take his lunch money.
Well, he looks like Cobra Kai. Like, he looks like a bad guy from Karate Kid.
Oh, that might be it. That might be why no
one... He's like a tall, sporty-looking meme, man.
Yeah, and like I know there's no reason not to like him as a person, but I just don't like his face.
He did go to Duke.
There's that, yeah. One of the questions going into the game was, like, you know, beyond Russell Westbrook being salty about the Warriors and taking his anger out on them, and on KD in particular... I was wondering how the rest of the Thunder team would feel about him. And it's interesting because, like, Kanter was mouthing off because that's what Kanter does, but even the way that Steven Adams was like, dude, come on, like, don't give him the time of day. Like, Adams was, like, just dismissive of him. And
well, I mean, Adams set that tone early this season, because after the first Thunder game, and reporters were like, hey, Steven Adams, you watched that first Warriors game, you see KD? And he was like, nope, I was busy watching some One Punch Man. And he was just watching anime.
Is that the one with the bald-haired guy?
Yeah, it's the guy, he kills everything in one punch, and it's like this like kind of existential comedy about, like, what's even the point of being an anime superhero if, like, you can just beat anyone in one punch. It's an amazing show. But that's besides the point. I mean, Steve Adams has great taste, and, like, we kind of already knew Steve Adams was a super cool guy. But...
Well, the point is because you have big, drawn-out fights with swords and stuff. Like, anime fights are long.
But not for him.
Well, right, but, like... All right, continue.
That's his whole crisis. But anyways, like, he set this tone of, like, indifference to Kevin Durant from the jump. Like, he'd rather watch anime, you know, than tune in to see how Kevin Durant's doing. And I think that that's, you know, somewhat admirable. You could definitely see that attitude on the bench, and he was just like, you guys, let's just not act like this matters to us.
Yeah, but there was... Kanter was salty. I don't know how to feel about
Grant
that.
Grant was kind of salty. Like, he was going straight at him. But it kind of feels almost like they just sort of inherited some, like, trickle-down salt from Russ. Like, from Russ.
Well, like, I don't know. So, you know, I think this was yesterday, and if it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before. Kevin Durant had a bunch of really interesting comments about his relationship with Russell Westbrook, and he was really... self-aware and, you know, recognized and outwardly stated, like, come on, guys, this is basketball, but we're two human beings, and as competitors, sure, we don't like each other, but, you know, Russell Westbrook's my brother, and I'll be at his Hall of Fame, you know, induction, and I hope he's at mine. We just went different paths, and I'm still figuring out my life, and he's married and is settled in OKC, but... You know, I still am trying to find my place in the universe, and it's interesting. And like, I don't think this is the case. I think that it's a little too cynical to say this, but saying that the day before their game, maybe it, like, psyched Russell Westbrook out, you know?
I mean, possible, but, like, Russell Westbrook has the supreme ability to turn, like, anything into a slight.
Well, did Russell Westbrook strike you as furious? I just don't think he did.
I think in the first quarter and early in the second, but then once it became, like, sort of clear that, like, game over, he definitely seemed to lose a lot of steam.
Yeah. I think you're right. But even in the first even early on, I just, like, he clearly didn't get any technical fouls, he didn't get any flagrant fouls. Like, he just, like, people say, you know, that he, like, plays with fury, and I just don't think it's, like, fury in the way of, like, I'm pissed off. It's just fury, like, I want to win this game.
Well, it's fury the way, like, a storm or a volcano is fury.
Yeah, it's not even, a storm or a volcano doesn't care that you're there. It's just exploding.
Right, exactly, and that's the way that he usually plays. Tonight, seemed like he was, like, on that level of focus early on, but then... seemed to really lose some steam as the game, you know, and part of that might be playing two nights in a back-to-back, part of it might be, like, getting himself so hyped up for the game that, like, he, like, sort of lost some focus, but whatever it was, like, he definitely seemed to, like, come down at some point in the second quarter during, like, that bombardment.
And this is something I talked about on Zardcast, which is the best Wizards podcast available, and you should check it out. And CT is my boy, so definitely check
them out. CT liked a really funny tweet of mine that no one else acknowledged, and I appreciated it very much.
Yeah, shout out CT, my boy. I was talking about this on his podcast the other day. I'm getting concerned about Russell Westbrook playing 40-something minutes a game. You know, he's going to have nights tonight where he's just too fatigued to play. But, like, it's when you're playing and you're just, like, exhausted, that's when you get injured. That's when you land the wrong way.
Right. Well, Russell Westbrook had a quote, I think it was today, maybe yesterday, where he talked about, like, exhaustion and being tired is, like, a mental thing. And it's just like, Russell, that's not true. Just like, yeah. It's not strictly, you can't just will away being tired. Like, you will get tired.
Yeah.
And then you'll get hurt. And so it is a little worrisome as far as, like...
Well, it's a mental thing that is a physical... It's because of a physical thing, you know? Like...
Well, it's not a strictly mental thing, I guess is what I mean. Like, it has physical, like, obvious physical components.
But you know, he's sort of right in terms of... It is a mental thing because, like, you know, you're not going to pay enough attention or just inherently be as alert as you would maybe otherwise be when you're, you know, sticking landings. But also your, like, limbs are a little bit deteriorated and you're not as springy. You know, you're maybe not going to pay as much attention to, like, getting stretched out and limber. Like, that's a big part of it is, you know, if you don't pay enough attention and you're not, like, on, you know, on high alert enough that you make sure that you land properly, like, that's a big problem, especially for a high flyer like Russell Westbrook. And especially for a high flyer with knee problems. Like, Russell Westbrook is... Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook in their primes are very, very close to the same player, with key differences, definitely, but just that style of attacking the basket and that athleticism. And one of them, their career has gone down the tubes, and the other one has had real injuries that are... maybe a concern, so...
Then it's come back from supernaturally fast. But yeah, I mean, supernaturally fast, like, fully recovered. But yeah, I mean, it is something that sort of can't be ignored, especially if he's going to have, like, a usage rate of, like, 41%.
Right, that's it, yeah.
And, like, play 40 minutes a night, and play this style of, like, just run into the brick wall of big dudes by the basket over and over again until they crumble sometime in the fourth quarter. Like... That's not, I mean, it's theoretically physically sustainable, but it seems like an easy way to get pretty injured.
Yeah, and, you know, the Avalanche started for the Thunder, for the Warriors, rather. They started to come back at the end of the first quarter because the Thunder subbed in their bench. And then when the Thunder started the second quarter, continuing with their bench, they just got obliterated. So I think the Thunder have not figured out what their answer is coming off the bench, and a lot of that is on the shoulders of Oladipo. And Oladipo knocked down his shots tonight.
Yeah, he's 8 of 13,
and that's encouraging. But most of those shots, as far as I could tell, were taken within the flow of the starter offense, which really just means like an offense that was directed by Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them came off Russell Westbrook drives or fast breaks.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of other... I mean, like, you know, Weber pointed this out on the broadcast over and over again that, like, Russell's doing this on his dolo. Like, there's not another playmaker on that roster.
But there is, Oladipo.
But Oladipo, like, historically isn't that. Like...
Well, yeah, he is. He's supposed to be that.
He's supposed to be that, but he never has been that. Like, he wasn't really that in Orlando.
Well, when he was put on the bench... by Scott Skiles. Yeah, okay,
when he was running six-man stuff for Orlando, he wasn't terrible. But, like, he's not on that kind of level. Though. And, like, what they need from him is to play that kind of way off the bench. But, like, they need him in the starting lineup doing stuff, too. Like, he, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the starting lineup, he needs to knock down shots. But the point I was making is just that, you know, his comparison was Dwayne Wade. And Dwayne Wade can run an offense. You don't want to run an offense if you have LeBron or Russell Westbrook for that matter, but if your bench is complete garbage, you should be able to put in Oladipo for those minutes and have him run a bench offense at least. And
you know, he's been fit. That's a skill he's still, I think, still learning.
Yeah, but he came out of college a little bit late, which is something that Dwayne Wade did too, which is, I think, part of the comparison. So, I mean, Oladipo's like 24, and he just got his he just got his first big life-changing money extension. And, you know, I have faith in Oladipo, but I expected him to be a more developed playmaker at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just not quite there yet. And that's a real problem for the Thunder, because they just don't have anywhere else to go. It's sort of the opposite of what the Warriors are dealing with. The Warriors are trying to figure out a way to, like, balance the fact that they have like four top 10 players on their start in their starting lineup, like between Durant, Thompson, Green, and Curry, and figuring out like how to spread those touches around and how to run an offense that keeps all four of them doing stuff. The Thunder don't have that concern. They have the opposite concern, like how to figure out an offense that like utilizes the like spare parts that surround Russell Westbrook with.
Yeah, and in terms of the Warriors bench, which there's a car passing. I should soundproof the studio a little bit more. Anyways, in terms of the Warriors bench, and the Warriors, you know, you were touching on there, have a similar problem to the Thunder in terms of like who's going to run these bench units. Steve Kerr has done a good job, especially in the preseason, of just trying stuff out, because I think that that's what the Warriors need to do, you know, is, you know, maybe there's a bench unit that works really well with Draymond and KD. I don't know quite how that would work, but like, if you can find a good unit with Draymond and KD, maybe you can find another unit that Klay Thompson runs, and then you can play Steph primarily with the starters, and you know, like stuff like that.
Figuring out like where to play those four guys, and also figuring out like what they have on their bench, which might even be an okay segue into this discussion of the centers. But like, I mean, I'm pretty high on Kevin Looney. I like what Kevin Looney's skill set looks like and how he's looked in like limited time, and he's been getting not a ton of minutes, but he's been getting double figure minutes the past couple games,
But he's a power forward.
He's a power forward. He's a big, long power forward who can do a lot of interior defense type things. I think that that's true. Yeah. I mean, he's a 6'9" wing power forward with long arms and legs. Like, he can do... He can bang inside the way Draymond can bang inside.
No way.
Well, he's got the body type.
He's not as bulky as Draymond. And plus, like... The vast majority of people with Draymond's body type won't be Draymond.
Yeah, for sure. But what I'm saying is, like,
he's not shown a propensity for me to be a rim protector.
I think he's got the tools to at least be a pretty okay player on the inside. But yeah, he's not going to solve that problem for them by himself. But like I'm saying, like, my point being more that, like, they've got players. They've got Looney. They've got, Damian Jones.
Who's injured right now. Is at least... reported to be a defender.
Yeah, they've got James Michael McAdoo.
McAdoo's not... I think McAdoo's a wing.
McAdoo, I think, plays inside, but it's just like...
Maybe I'm thinking McCaw.
Yeah, you McCaw's the wing. McAdoo's... Or, God, they just list every 6'9 player as a small forward, but it's like, these dudes play inside, but whatever. they've got some pieces, but like, they don't... You know, just because, like, they're so dang good, we don't know what these dudes are really capable of, what they're going to look like. So it's, like, also figuring out, like, what they even have on their bench.
Yeah. So that
is a pretty important, you know, side of things to, you know, have some revelations about.
Yeah, and so that's where we'll start this segment. Alright, so first, if the recording during the first part of this wasn't quite perfect, it is because Lux was a little too far away. One of the things I normally do is move the desk a little bit more that way, so it's mostly my fart.
Mostly my fart.
If the recording's not perfect, it's because of my farts, but it should be good now.
Yeah, we should have it fixed now.
But anyways, the last segment of the program, I did incredibly in-depth notes on the Warriors' center position, and we talked a little bit about this in terms of their young guys and what they hope up to this point. And, you know, I'm on board with what the Warriors are doing right now. I think we don't have an answer as to whether or not their center position is okay, because Damian Jones might come back, and he's at least projected to be a rim protector. He's 6'11", has a 7'2" wingspan. He's really springy. On NBA Draft.net, his player comparison is Festus Ozeli. So, he could come back from his pectoral injury and be good, but it's I think it's clearly the biggest concern for the Warriors at this point.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think it's not even, that's not even really a question. Like, they've got, I was saying before, we were talking about this earlier, and I was saying that they're too deep at every position.
TWO deep?
Yeah, TWO deep at every position.
Mm-hmm.
Except center, they're sort of almost, they have one, and that could quickly become zero viable center player. I mean, like, there's a dream world where JaVale, who's a former favorite of mine, you know, comes back and really steps it up. But like, from what we've seen from him this season and like in years past, the recent years past, like that seems like kind of a pipe dream.
Yeah, and really for JaVale to be a good fit for the Warriors at center, he'll have to be something he really never was, which is like smart.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have to pass.
Yeah,
which is not his game.
Yeah, but he at least has two components, which I think they're largely missing, or actually we'll go with three. There's a point at which he was really one of the best rim protectors. I'm not sure about his advanced stats, but like ostensibly was one of the best rim protectors in the league and was a top five rebounder. So those are the two things that the Warriors are missing. And then also just a pick and roll offensive game is something I think that they don't have. So,
well, we saw the big man pick and roll. They've got,
oh, right.
They've got like the Draymond Steph pick and roll. They've got a lot of pick and rolls they can run, but nothing with like a rim roll kind of crash it.
Yeah,
crash to the basket.
So, do you think that they could trade Kevon Looney straight up for DeAndre Jordan?
Absolutely not.
yeah. So, I mean, that was just a hilarious joke because, of course, they can't. The list I made, and this is the awesome comprehensive list of all the possibilities that the Warriors should be looking at in terms of trades. A quick note on free agent centers. There's one of them that I wrote down, but the other guys like Nazir Muhammad, nah. Kendrick Perkins.
I don't talk about Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah. Kendrick Perkins, no. That's pretty much it. But actually, we can start with, well, first of all, a lot of these guys who we're going to touch on are guys who are injured or have underplayed or been undervalued for their team, because what I've said is that the Warriors need to pull off a Timofey Mozgov, or they don't need to, but the ideal would be that they could pull off a Timofey Mozgov trade. They have their 2017 first round pick and they have their second round pick, so just something like what the Cavaliers did, like, you know, sort of sell their, you know, late first round picks, and you know the Warriors have young guys that the Cavaliers didn't have, to try to find that center who's been underutilized, undervalued, underappreciated, blah blah blah. So
yeah, I mean, like we're saying, they have very limited cap space.
Yeah,
they are too deep in a lot of positions, but that doesn't go further than that. Aside from like the wings, where like Looney and McAdoo might grow into some things in like the wing power forward area, but like we don't know that right now.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of like tradable immediate contributors like right now.
And you know, part of the thing with me being skeptical about these young guys is like, do you want them playing playoff minutes? Because really, they don't have a big man off the bench to play significant playoff minutes, and that's the issue. Because, you know, David West is actually a question mark too. David West, for me, I would hope would A, play well in the playoffs, and B, be a good option to play like 15 spot minutes and bring that veteran presence that might be actually able to give them something offensively that they didn't have against the Cavaliers, which is, you know, low post scoring. And, you know, it would have been nice to have David West during the last 5 minutes of that game against the Cavs, because he could just somehow figure a way of getting the ball in the basket. But, you know, he's 36, you know, and he also is 36. And although he shows flashes of his former self, he definitely doesn't even look as good as he did last year.
No, I mean, they've got just the front court in general is just like has a ton of questions for the Warriors. And there are questions that they got to figure, like, it's not hard to envision the team as currently constructed buzzsawing the playoffs, winning the title. Like, that can happen. But, like, we saw it in the finals last year. We saw it in the San Antonio game this year. Like, they have weaknesses that can be taken advantage of. And minimizing those is going to be huge for them, because
obviously the offense is going to get buckets. Like, they're going to have great play from Curry and Durant and Thompson and Green. But teams, like, I mean, that's it, right? Like, their talent disparity is always going to be present. Like, there's not going to be a team with a more talented roster than the Warriors that they're going to play. Yeah. Which means every team has to scheme for them. Which means that the teams are going to be actively targeting their weak spots, even in regular season games, in a way that teams don't normally. And that's only going to get worse in the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
And so having some sort of insurance policy for that, or some sort of backup plans, or even like reinforcing what they have now, is going to go a long way in at least making it way more likely, like making that a greater challenge for the teams they're dealing with.
Yeah, and I think we've touched on all of their current options that, like I said, you know, this is something to watch going up to the trade deadline, because I think that probably you don't want to pull the trigger yet, because, you know, it might be the case that, you know, someone looks better than they thought they were going to. It also might be the case that, like, it becomes glaringly obvious that, like, this is a huge need by the trade deadline, because we ran over these really quick, but, you know, Zaza could break down. He's older. He's 34. Damian Jones has a pectoral injury, and he's a rookie. David West, 36, never really played the center much. Anderson Varejão is complete trash. And then JaVale McGee is kind of dumb. So,
and you're looking at Looney and McAdoo playing spot minutes off their position.
But, yeah, and, like, we want a rim protector. And, really, we want, like, a classic rim protector. So, we can start with my list. The first one I have on my list, which might be my favorite answer, you know, granted, his back injury might be a real problem, but right now the Houston Rockets and Donatas Money, actually this isn't an option. I think that they can match. Is he restricted? I think Donatas might be restricted, which is why
I don't know his contract off the top of my head. I can use the old fact checker to look it up real quick.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why the Rockets just have stayed pat on him is because I think he's like in that Tristan Thompson place. Yeah, he is a restricted free agent. Okay, never mind. So, Houston can match any offer sheet, and, like, the Warriors could only offer him a minimum. So, take Donatas Moneyunas off the table. Yep. It would be really bad if the Warriors offered him a minimum, because the Rockets would get a free Donatas Moneyunas at the minimum. So, never mind. So, moving on from that, though, we have Tariq Black on the Lakers. We both agreed that he's not the perfect fit, though.
Yeah, he's not really much of a rim protector.
I have, like, a lot of options. So, like, the ones that aren't realistic, we should probably just breeze by.
All right, so, yeah, Tariq Black, no thank you.
Kosta Kufos, I really like.
I mean, there's the arguments. Yeah, there are things about Kosta Kufos that are good. He's a strong dude. He plays pretty good defense. He isn't like a springy or a quick guy, but he can challenge shots at the rim pretty well. I just feel like that's the only reason you'd grab Kosta Kufos is because the tall, funny man who falls down.
Zaza?
Yeah, Zaza is hurt, is underproducing, and all you're doing is placing Zaza with worse Zaza.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that's true. I think Kosta Kufos is underrated, but he's on a $7 million contract, and really what the Warriors have to move is minimums and rookie salaries. So unless Zaza was included, the salary couldn't work. So we'll just go ahead and scratch him off. Willie Cauley-Stein, though, is on a rookie contract, and the Kings have 5 million centers, and Cauley-Stein has not impressed in Sacramento, and I think honestly, you know, the Kings front office is dumb as heck, and maybe you can move like one of their young wings, like,
yeah. And I think Cauley-Stein's the ideal sort of player than to try to get it, a rookie who's fallen out of favor, a young player who's fallen out of favor, especially because, I mean, amongst the many sort of undeniable positives of the Warriors' run is they have developed just the heck out of some internal talent, like,
yeah,
Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Festus, the young guys now. Ian Clark's been really good, or not really good, but has been playing better, much more than I anticipated.
Yeah,
in a sense. they do have a really great scouting internal development program. So grabbing someone like Colley Stein, who has talent but hasn't been able to manifest in any real way.
So much upside.
So much upside, and they seem like they'd be the kind of team that could harness that.
Right. I mean, Sacramento is the exact opposite of the front office slash coaching staff that you just described.
Yeah, like, I mean, they bury young dudes on the bench, and then...
And I was talking about this the other day, like, you know, what if the Spurs had drafted Ben McLemore? Like, he'd be so much better.
Yeah, I mean, there are some teams, Spurs and Warriors immediately jumped to mind, that are just really good at developing young talent.
Yeah, so I think that it could very much so be the case that Colley Stein is in developmental purgatory. And again, like, the Warriors are looking for guys that have fallen out of the rotation who have significant upside. So
I find it hardly that even the poorly managed Kings, would be willing to give up on a lottery pick that quick.
Dude, I don't know, man.
But I mean, if anyone's going to, it's probably them.
I think also he might start yapping. I mean, they drafted another center. He's barely playing any minutes, and, like, he was really excited because they talked about, you know, starting him and playing a bunch more minutes and not having George Karl out there. He was, like, good last year in his minutes and had good rim protection on top of that and was pretty much exactly what the Kings needed. But he just has not been good this year.
Well, he does clog the spacing for Boogie in a very real way. But I think with the Warriors, that's not a concern. I think actually with the Warriors, there's even the added, like, you could put out a kind of insane Oplex death lineup of Curry, Thompson, Durant, Green, Stein, because Colley Stein can guard 1 through 5.
Yeah, well, and you would start Willie Colley Stein.
Yeah.
Like
that would be your starting lineup, and that would be a lineup of death-esque thing where you could...
And Colley Stein,
run, because he can. That dude can run.
Yeah,
he's a crazy athlete. He can guard all five positions reasonably well.
And he's really good on mid-range jump shots when he's wide open, which he would get.
Yeah, he can. I mean, I don't know if I'd say he's really good, but he can knock them down.
Yeah, right. He'll take them, which is important.
He'll take them, which is important, and he puts in work. He's, I think he's probably just a little too good to be a realistic possibility. But, I mean, I think of the, like, pipe dream candidates, he's probably my favorite.
Yeah, some of the ones that I wrote down, too, are mostly just options because their front office is stupid.
Right, and this is one of those, but I don't think... It's our division that's happening, but I think that it would be a very good fit.
Yeah. Next up is Mike Muscala on the Atlanta Hawks. He's 6'11". He's shown a propensity to shoot from outside. He's not a wing, but he's been to Hawks University. He can move the ball and play defense. I just don't think that the Hawks are looking to move a center right now.
I mean, there's that for sure. I also think that, like, the value Muscala gets is largely from his offensive abilities. And that's not what the Warriors need.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that, like, he'd be a nice player to have, but I don't think he solves any of the problems they actually have.
Yeah. You know, one thing, though, is they, you know, we're arguing for rim protection, but, like, they also could use Maurice Spates. But, I mean, it's not their first priority. We're looking for rim protection.
Right, having a Maurice Spates is good just because it gives them a second unit center who can score and who can do some things, and that's great, but...
We're looking for Festus.
Yeah, we're looking for Festus more than looking for Maurice.
Yeah, because, like, scoring is clearly not a problem.
Yeah.
So, next up is... You know, and this would operate on... This is a lot less... This is just not very realistic. Taj Gibson, you know? I don't even think his money would work. We can skip it.
Yeah, I think Taj Gibson's going to happen.
Spencer Hawes, same thing. Money doesn't work. Never mind.
Money doesn't work, and his value is offensive, not defensive.
Yeah, right. Aaron Baines, I think the money works.
I don't think the money works, but that's a good fit.
Yeah. Aaron Baines, you know, he's, like, gritty. He's Australian. So,
I mean, he's not as fast as, like, my dream person for this job would be, but he can move.
Yeah.
He's
a bench
shots.
Center.
He's tall. Yeah,
he's not that great, and he doesn't have a high upside. But
he'd be effective in that kind of role, for sure.
Right. Tyler Zeller from the Celtics, I think, could definitely work. And he's got more of a jump shot. So.
Yeah, and he's got a little more mobility as well.
Yeah.
Than someone like Baines. his propensity for being not all that physically strong would be a bigger problem, except that I feel like whenever there's like a real bruiser on the court, they just throw Draymond at it.
Right. And also, you know, physicality aside, he's a real 7-footer, yeah. Like arguably 7'1".
Right. Like they just probably switch him because he's pretty mobile. They'd probably just switch him to guard the natural power forward and have Draymond just guard the banger guy.
Yeah.
Because Draymond is pretty stellar at that.
I think Tyler Zeller would be a good fit, and he's not on a huge contract. The problem is, or maybe it's not a problem, I would think that you would have to trade him for one of your young guys, one of your other young guys, who Boston decides is good, but the problem is Boston's not looking to trade for any pretty good young guys. They've got plenty. And Boston also does not want any more late first round picks. Like, it's not what they need.
Right now. I don't think Boston wants. I don't think Danny Ainge has any interest in having Brad Stevens develop a Kevin Looney or a James Michael McAdoo or another, like, a pick number 30 out of this draft. Like, I don't think that's really on the table for them.
Agreed. So I think probably we can move on from Alex Len. Or not Alex Len, move to Alex Len. So first, you know, he was the 5th pick, I think, in his draft.
Yep.
He's still a young guy.
I don't think he got an extension.
He did not. And the Suns, I think, you know, I mean, they got Tyson Chandler. They also just drafted 2 more bigs. Like, he's clearly fallen out of favor, and for good reason.
I mean, he had a good game, a really good game recently.
He has sporadic good games.
And so I'm curious where. Yeah, but he had a real efficient, real good, like 25 minutes, 18-6 or something like that. The kind of game that like might earn you a couple more looks from your coaching staff. So I'm curious about that. But I mean, I think he'd be. I mean, he's a little slow footed, but I think he'd be effective enough for what they're looking for as far as rim protector goes. Like he's athletic and he's got pretty good vertical ability. Side to side, he's not so nice.
Yeah,
his giant.
But he's just so big.
Yeah, his giant concrete feet like clang into each other a lot, and he's not super fast, but he's very big, and he's like pretty good at getting off his feet.
Yeah, and he can also hit open jump shots.
Yeah, or at least he'll take him.
Yeah, right, and that's a thing. Like,
cause no, like that's half the battle.
That tiny bit of separation is big for the Warriors finishing at the rim. Because yeah, like Steph is such a good cutter. Like, if there's that little bit of separation where you're like, I guess I'll contest Alex Len. That means that you're 4 feet away from the basket instead of 2.
Yeah, and Steph can. I mean, Steph's preternatural sort of like ability with angles makes that a huge difference. Klay's ability to cut and get space makes that a huge difference. Durant's an underrated cutter because he almost never has to do it because he just like generates his own offense. But like, he's great at finding spaces like that.
And you would hope that the Warriors would teach him to be a better passer than he's been so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fair to assume that there you can assume for some institutionalized progress for whoever they trade for, just because their ability to develop players has been like pretty consistently excellent for the past several years.
Right. So Cole Aldrich, the money doesn't work. Justin Hamilton has shown a lot on the Nets so far, and the reason why I think that this is like really realistic, and let's hold off. It's like 5 games into the season. The reason why I think Justin Hamilton might be a good choice is because Brooklyn is one of those teams who could use and could want some of those young guys that the Warriors have because they just need some young answers. And then on top of that, like, you know, for a team like the Boston Celtics, who are, you know, maybe ironically, I don't know, who have all of the Nets picks, for a team like the Celtics, that 29th pick isn't that appetizing. But for the Nets, like, they could use it.
No, I mean, that's huge. Yeah, I mean, the Justin Hamilton, I think, fits what they need pretty well, if not, you know, perfectly or even, like, exceptionally well. But, like, all right. And, I mean, and if his numbers keep up, maybe even better than all right. But more significantly, he's one of the few players who comes close to being the kind of player they need on a team that would actually be interested in the kind of assets they have.
Yeah.
Which makes him sort of the ideal fit in that in terms of possibility. Like, on the like possibility viability matrix, I think he's probably the best balance of the two.
Yeah,
anyone that we've talked about.
I like Justin Hamilton as an answer. So he in Brooklyn has been playing 25 minutes a game, is hitting 1.2 threes a game also on 33% shooting.
Yeah, he shoots.
That would be dope. And he's also getting 6 rebounds in 25 minutes, which is pretty nice, and a full block. So
yeah, and he's putting up solid defensive numbers. He's like, you know, he's doing good work, and I think that
he's got a higher PER than DeAndre Jordan.
Well, that's good.
I mean, DeAndre Jordan hasn't been that great next to Blake Griffin, so whatever. It seems like he's having a bit of a regression because Blake is back. But, I mean, still, he's 7 feet tall. He's, you know, a good outside shooter. He is an outside shooter. And he rebounds. And, yeah, I mean, he has a little bit of upside. And he's been showing it in Brooklyn. And plus, like, that's a trade that I could see happening.
Yeah, I think so.
So Kenneth Free would be such a great option, but like the money does not work. He's an interesting buyout candidate.
Conceivable, but then I don't think he's taking a minimum.
Yeah, I agree. So let's see. Next up would be you know, I put Nerlens Noel, but like okay. This is a guy who traded a lot for Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah,
Colangelo.
Yeah, I mean, look, we the Nerlens Noel discussion is actually how this idea for assignment got started in the first place, and I just think that it comes down to like there's no, I don't think those late round picks or any of these young dudes are going to be enough, and that means you're trading Livingston, maybe Iguodala,
yeah,
someone like that, and I just think that the matchup advantages and the flexibility that those players give to the way that they built lineups in Golden State does more. You should remember that, like, the starting center defensive rim protector role in Golden State is really, like, 25 minutes a game max. Like that's
well, if you got Nerlens Noel, you play him a million minutes. Nerlens Noel, like, in his best universe is, like...
But, yeah, but, you know, you're going to... He needs rest. So does Draymond, but you're also going to need to run. You're going to want to run that death lineup out. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not, like, the same as starting center on most teams. So, like.
True.
Which is good for Nerlens in a certain way, but I just don't think that. I think that kind of diminishes the trade off in terms of we're losing Livingston. But, you know, I mean, Livingston. That's an interesting one because if Ian Clark continues. I mean, Livingston gives them a lot of flexibility that Ian Clark does not.
Yeah.
But if Ian Clark continues to, like, hit a lot of threes and be a really good, like, scoring, like, leading scorer off the bench kind of player. Now?
Yeah.
This becomes a more viable prospect. But I still think they kind of need Livingston as, like, a change of pace and a extra roster flexibility option, especially guarding bigger point guards, stuff like that. So I find it harder to envision that happening, but I think that there's a universe where enough development happens for me and Clark that Livingston becomes a tradable piece.
Yeah, and it's just like Nerlens Noel is like an interesting side option because it's interesting, but like there's two huge things that get in the way of this. One, the Warriors already gave up so much bench continuity, and really Sean Livingston has been so great for them in limited minutes. Like and then the other big thing is, like, someone can offer a better deal for Nerlens.
Yeah, well, there's... And two other things, I think, is... I think Nerlens' value will go down as they approach the trade deadline, which is going to make that a more negotiable position.
I'm not sure about that. I think there might be other teams that, like, realize that they don't have anything at the big right. position.
But also, I think that the Sixers' desperation to trade him will increase as we approach the trade deadline, too.
I think that honestly, Colangelo, if they don't get an option that if they don't get an offer that they like, they'll keep him and match like in restricted free agency because they can.
Yeah, maybe. But then the other thing that I think is maybe the more interesting thing is like, just given the way that the Sixers stuff went down, like there's the Colangelos are like kind of like the Adam Silver NBA ownership council's like stooges in Philadelphia. if not 100%, like, not obviously not all the way, like, they're not, like, this isn't them running the team into the ground because the other owners want them to, but, like, they clearly have links to that community, stuff like that. That ownership community is not super stoked on the existence of the Warriors as they exist now.
That's a great point.
And I think that, I mean, I think I think that for any GM, making these kind of trades is going to risk, like, some serious, like, heat from the rest of the league.
Yeah.
And I think the Colangelos more than anyone else would feel that.
Okay, yeah, 100%. That's a really awesome point. Did you just now think of that?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, man, that's nice. Why I'm here.
Critical hit, critical strike.
Super effective.
I think that Thomas Robinson was cut by the Lakers.
Man, Thomas Robinson would be, like, I don't think he'd be great because, like, he's playing that everywhere he's gone, but, like, man, why?
Why would you get him?
Like, what? No, why can't, isn't he good?
Dude, I don't know. He's athletic. Like, he is a good rebounder.
He has a lot of the tools, but, like,
I just think, God, I mean, I think he's also been better in his stints than people realize. Like, he hasn't been, like, completely trash. Like, I think Thomas Robinson is definitely an interesting option because I'm pretty sure he's out of the league right now. And he, like, is there more upside for Thomas Robinson to be an answer than for JaVale?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I think Thomas Robinson is a higher upside than JaVale right now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, well, I
but
mean,
he is a pretty similar player, at least offensively, as in, like, he's hardly a smart player, you know?
I mean, he's not going to, like, create some kind of, he's not going to create a ton of, like, new offense on his own. Yeah, he's mostly going to score off rim rolls and offensive rebounds. So, yeah, he's mostly going to score off rim rolls, offensive rebounds. So, which is very JaVale-esque. At the same time, you know, he's a big dude, he's athletic, and that gives them a lot of options to play with him. I just don't think he's, you know, whatever it is that has made him play that in other places, I don't think it's going to go away in Golden State. And we just talked about this. Like, Golden State has such a good, they have such a good scouting and development arm of their front office that it's hard for me to believe that they wouldn't have looked at Thomas Robinson and seen whether they want, you know, whether they want a piece of that or not, given that he's available.
True.
And it's not like this is a secret, like, it's not like we're just now finding out that Zaza Pachulia might not be a super great center. You know what I mean? Like, they know that.
Yeah. That's a real thing. So, Kevin Serafin.
That would be interesting. I do like Kevin Serafin a lot.
He's not like a perfect fit. I doubt he would start over Zaza. He's a good insurance option.
No, yeah, I think he'd be good as, like, a second unit center there for them. I think he'd be all right.
He's an interesting mix between Festus and Mo Spades.
Yeah, he's got some offensive ability. He's a pretty solid defender. He's athletic. Like, he doesn't excel in any particular space, but I think he'd be enough to, like, yeah, hold down second units, spell Zaza when he's particularly tired, and run with the starters. I think that's not a bad option.
Yeah. So Tiago Splitter, his contract is too high, but,
and he's hurt.
Well, right. Yeah, and he's been chronically hurt. So, like, he would need to basically be stretched by the Hawks, and I don't think that the Hawks would do that if there was any chance that he was going to play this year.
Yep.
So, Tiago Splitter, not really a great option. That, like, copy and paste what we just said for Brandon Wright on the Grizzlies.
Yep.
So, Quincy Acey. What do you think about that? Is Quincy Acey, I think he's on the Mavs right now, on the middle.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to be honest, I haven't watched a super ton of Quincy Acey.
He's a gritster, man. He's gritty as heck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really the way the Warriors play, but maybe they could use it a little bit. I just don't know enough about him to be super enthused. I mean, it seems like he'd be an option. Can't imagine his contract super high that they demand a ton of assets for him. But,
and the Mavs could use young guys and picks. So, like, Quincy Acey is someone to watch. If the Mavs can demonstrate that he still has value in the league, like, I could see something like that happening. Also, the Mavs are an ownership that is the complete opposite of the Colangelo situation that you just described.
Yeah.
As in, they've already shown a propensity to help the Warriors out.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. And another guy on the Mavs is Salah Mejri. But I think that, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I think that the Mavs like him too much.
Yeah, I think that they have some interest in trying to develop that guy.
But he's a 29-year-old rookie, though. So another reason why that might be an option is because, you know, again, the Mavs really need young players with upside, and they really need draft picks.
But if I'm the Warriors, I think that I stay away from players like that because
I think, Salah to me is really high up there in terms of best options for them.
Well, here's my issue with that if I'm the Warriors, because I think that they want to go as young as possible with this because it seems to me that they do treat their scouting and development as like a legit asset. Right, like they're more than happy getting a bunch of second rounders and late first rounders because they have a lot of faith that they're going to be able to get those guys and turn them into players.
But they need an answer right now, though.
Yeah, is 29-year-old rookie really going to be good to go right now?
Dude, Salah is good. Salah's good.
He's all right. I mean, yeah, I mean it might be fine. I just think they're like
Salah's really good, man, and like Salah is like Festus Ezeli. Yeah, he is Festus Ezeli.
I don't think that that's true.
Dude, Salah's like a really good rim protector. He definitely gets a lot of rebounds. He's a rim roller.
I'll have to watch more of his shit, but like I don't think he's Festus Ezeli. I think that is a not even a particularly clean comp.
He's more like Hassan Whiteside pre-breaking out. Like,
yeah, that dude couldn't even stay in the league.
Well, but pre-breaking out as in like when he was playing 20 minutes a game on his stint with the Heat.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I just don't
think... But his offensive game is totally different. Like, he is a capable passer, if not super willing, and, like, you know, is not going to be someone who will ever post up their man.
I just don't think, like, five games of him being makes me that intrigued by that idea for sure.
Dude, he was good. Okay, well, I'm a Mavs fan. Like, I've watched him enough to say that, like,
there's no way you could have watched him enough because he's only played five games. That's not
Salah Mejri? Oh, no. So he's not a young rookie. He's a young... not an old rookie. He's an old sophomore is what I mean. He played last year.
I didn't even, like, see, like, I didn't even really...
Yeah, he's a deep bench option. I don't think you're bad because you haven't heard of him. Like, he's, like...
If he's a deep bench option, like, yeah. Carlisle's smart. Like, if he's a player that is going to make a difference, like, that guy's getting minutes on that roster. Like, it's not like the Mavs have a shit... Sorry. It's not like the Mavs have a bunch of super dope options to throw out in any position.
Yeah.
So, like, if he's not getting minutes, there's a reason for that.
Well, he is getting substantial minutes, and he got a lot of minutes in the playoffs, like, and was really good against the Thunder. So... But he's just, like, obscure. So that's all I'm saying. But as a Mavs fan, not, like, a... I don't know. As someone from Dallas, like, I can vouch for him. I think it would be a great fit. The contracts work. I think he's on a minimum. So here's an interesting option. Kyle O'Quinn on the Knicks.
I like Kyle O'Quinn a lot.
Yeah, and he's been garbage on the Knicks, but it's the Knicks. Like, J.R. Smith was garbage, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Kyle O'Quinn's more... I mean, like I said, I think they'd prefer to go younger. I think it makes sense for them to go younger. But I think that if they're in a position where they just have to make a move, Kyle O'Quinn is the sort of guy that could work for the same reasons the Nets trade makes sense. The Knicks don't have a ton of picks, don't have a ton of young talent, yeah. Could use that kind of influx.
Kyle O'Quinn, by the way, has been really, really bad for the Knicks.
This year? Yeah. He was pretty okay last year.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, like, great, but, like... He was a good deep bench option.
Yeah. Well, but before that, like, he's another guy who also is undervalued because do you remember where he came from before he was on the Knicks?
No.
The Magic, another stupid-ass organization.
Yeah,
so,
well, he's also undervalued because big man passing is generally undervalued, I think.
Yeah, and Kyle O'Quinn...
he's a very good passer for big man.
Yeah, and he can do so many different things. He has, like, an interesting off-the-dribble mid-range game. He can shoot the three marginally. He is a good rebounder, big body guy. He is a, you know, not proven rebounder, but ostensibly a good rebounder. Kyle O'Quinn, I think, is a great option. This is also a front office that I think is impatient and will be, like, you know, let's go all in on Mandaugas Kuzminskas. You know, he's definitely the answer. And Kyle O'Quinn hasn't been good for us, and he's a veteran, and that pisses us off. So let's trade JR and Kylo Quinn. So, yeah, I think they're the type of team, you know?
Yeah. Also, I just want to point out, it's not that she's playing 8 minutes a game and averaging 3 points.
Well, that's, like, you know, that's fine, whatever. Like, he's...
No, but I think, I mean, Kylo Quinn and Salamedri fall into the same boat, that I think that there's, like, somewhat effective deep bench dudes who can fill that spot for them, especially if Zaza holds up and they're just filling in backup center minutes.
Yeah. By the way, we only have two more, okay. So that's good. We're getting there.
I'm getting tired. It's late.
Right, it's 2 a.m. Okay, so second to last one is Willie Reed on the Heat. And the Heat fall into the same situation as the Knicks, where, like, they're a team that wants to capitalize on, you know, big free agent signings, and the Heat really trust their internal development. Willie Reed doesn't have a super high upside because he's a little bit older than a lot of players. He spent, like, a few years in the D League. But, like, Willie Reed, to me, is also, out of all the ones we've listed, he's, like, top five, because he's a great rebounder, has shown that he's a consistent rim protector as well. I really like Willie Reed.
I think it's something Willie Reed. I think that...
He's also an awesome guy.
He's inexpensive. Yeah, he's a cool guy. He's got a lot of, like, classic big man skills as far as, like, okay around the rim, decent rim protector, good rebounder. And, I mean, the only thing that makes me, like, a little reticent about, like, the possibility level is that, like, I feel like Pat Riley doesn't want to help out the Warriors and certainly doesn't want to help out Kevin Durant after being so spurned.
Yeah, if that's how he feels.
But, like, I do, like, but rather than, like, projecting potential emotional states onto 60, 70-year-old dudes running basketball organizations, I do think absent that, he's a pretty decent fit. Especially because there's not a ton that... I don't think he's going to cost a ton to get.
Yeah.
Both in terms of paying him, in terms of assets relinquished.
Yeah, and I think the Heat also, as an organization, it makes sense why they might want to move him. Because, like, I think they have better internal development, honestly, than the Warriors do. Like, they've made, you know... like, they made Tyler Johnson a $16 million... $20 million man.
Sort of.
They've done that consistently, too.
They paid Tyler Johnson that much money. But no, I don't know. I don't think that...
Dude, they have a bunch of young guys who are
coming up who are pretty good. But, like...
Yeah.
I don't know if they're better than the Warriors. The Warriors...
And the Sioux Falls... The Sioux Falls D-League team is, like, has won... Like,
yeah, they're strong. But, like, they developed Steph Curry. They developed Klay Thompson. They developed Festus. They developed Draymond.
Yeah, but I trust late lottery picks, they've been better.
They
figured out Hassan Whiteside. Like, I think if they see some upside in a guy like Kevon Looney or a guy like Patrick McCaw,
they might,
like,
take a shot at him for sure.
Right. And, like, also that power forward position, they're starting, I don't even know. Like, okay, and last center is Alexis Ojinka, but, like, we can pretty much just straight up say no, he's not, like, the perfect fit.
I mean,
he's big.
I've been complaining about players being too slow, and he's, like, the two slowest dude there is.
Yep. But he's really big. He has, like, good touch. He has shown flashes as far as being, like, a super dominant bench center. But he's not a super awesome fit, although the contracts work and the Pelicans are stupid. So they might be able to get him for nothing.
Yeah.
And he would be an interesting flyer.
Yeah, he'd be an interesting shot to take, but I think that it's just not a good call for the Warriors.
Yeah, and hey, it's 2 a.m. In Austin, Texas right now.
Beautiful Austin, Texas.
Yeah, and we're... goodbye, thanks for listening. I think it was a pretty good episode, pretty interesting stuff. Lux, at MLSReport, and I am Chris Hackman, your host. Follow at Almighty Baller on Twitter, like the Facebook page, almightyballer.com, and continue to listen to Almighty Baller Podcast Network podcasts. Listen to this one, of course, but also check out, we have tons of great things. You can find us at almightyballer.com and blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. Good night. We're tired. Hope you enjoyed the episode.